Welcome. You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hey there. Welcome to this edition of The Marginalian, formerly known as Brain Pickings, an online digest of interesting and inspiring articles across art, science, philosophy, creativity, children's books, and other strands of our search for truth, beauty, and meaning. All the articles in The Marginalian are written by its founder, Maria Popova, and can be found at themarginalian.org. You can now hear these articles as part of the series of podcasts from Airs LA, the audio internet reading service of Los Angeles. Today's article is titled March 28, 1941. Virginia Woolf's suicide letter and its cruel misinterpretation in the media. On March 28, 1941, shortly after the devastating dawn of World War II, Virginia Woolf, born January 25, 1882, deceased March 28, 1941, filled her overcoat pockets with rocks and walked into the River Ouse behind her house, never to emerge alive. A relapse of the all-consuming depression she had narrowly escaped in her youth had finally claimed her life. She left behind a remarkable body of work, from her poignant diaries to her magnificent essays, to her little-known children's books, to the longest and most charming love letter in literature, and a cohort of heartbroken friends. But the most stirring thing she left behind was her suicide letter to her husband, Leonard. "Dearest, I feel certain I'm going mad again. I feel we can't go through another of those terrible times, and I shan't recover this time. I begin to hear voices, and I can't concentrate. So I am doing what seems the best thing to do. You have given me the greatest possible happiness. You have been in every way all that anyone could be. I don't think two people could have been happier till this terrible disease came. I can't fight any longer. I know that I'm spoiling your life, that without me, you could work. And you will, I know. You see, I can't even write this properly. I can't read. What I want to say is, I owe all the happiness of my life to you. You have been entirely patient with me and incredibly good. I want to say that. Everybody knows it. If anybody could have saved me, it would have been you. Everything has gone from me but the certainty of your goodness. I can't go on spoiling your life any longer. I don't think two people could have been happier than we have been." What made the letter especially heartbreaking, however, wasn't just that it embodied so excruciatingly modernity's tragic epidemic, but also that its fate reflected the ugliest aspects of media and journalism. In afterwards, letters on the death of Virginia Woolf, Scholar Sybil Oldfield notes that, after Wolfe's letter was made public, members of the British press took it upon themselves to bestow upon the beloved author a last judgment, a painfully ungenerous one. On October 27th, a month after Wolfe's death, the Sunday Times ran the following self-righteous evisceration by a Mrs. Kathleen Hicks, wife of the Bishop of Lincoln. "Sir, I read in your issue of Sunday last that the coroner at the inquest on Mrs. Virginia Wolfe said she was, quote, undoubtedly much more sensitive than most people to the general beastliness of things happening in the world today." End quote. What right has anyone to make such an assertion? If he really did say this, he belittles those who are hiding their agony of mind, suffering bravely, and carrying on unselfishly for the sake of others. Many people, possibly even more quote-unquote sensitive, have lost their all and seen appalling happenings, yet they take their part nobly in this fight for God against the devil. Where are our ideals of love and faith? And what shall we be if we listen to and sympathize with this sort of, "I cannot carry on"? Mrs. Hicks' ideals of love and faith, apparently, did not include empathy. Upon reading this, Leonard Wolfe was so appalled that he immediately sent to the newspaper an emotionally charged, fact-checked rebuttal. "I feel that I should not silently allow to remain on record that Virginia Wolfe committed suicide because she could not face the terrible things through which all of us are going. For this is not true." Then newspapers gave her words as, "I feel I cannot go on any longer in these terrible times." That is not what she wrote. The words which she wrote are, "I feel that I'm going mad again. I feel we can't go through another of those terrible times." She had had a mental breakdown about 25 years ago. The old symptoms began to return about 3 weeks before she took her life, and she felt that this time she would not recover. Like everyone else, she felt the general strain of the war, and the return of her illness was partly due to that strain. But the words of her letter and everything she has ever said proved that she took her life, not because she could not carry on, but because she felt she was going mad again and would not this time recover. But devastatingly, even Leonard's rebuttal, too, was twisted out of context, published under the misleading headline, "I Cannot Carry On." The then version of clickbait, the article replaced the phrase, "those terrible times." Virginia's reference to her first acute bout of depression in her youth, with "these terrible times," changing the meaning completely and making it a reference to World War II, an interpretation that aligned quite conveniently with the media's spin of Wolfe's suicide as an act of unpatriotic cowardice rather than a personal tragedy. To make matters even more lamentable, the Times reprinted the misquotation several days later, the then version of reblogging or retweeting without critical analysis and fact-checking. Similar attacks, some of which were even unleashed on Wolfe's posthumously published work, continued in the press for more than a year. The incident is particularly unsettling for two reasons. at its root, is a testament to what a cruel and indiscriminate predator depression is, capable of consuming even humanity's greatest minds. Yet the uncompassionate response illustrates just how poorly we understand the condition. Above all, however, embedded in the media's treatment of Virginia's suicide is a grotesque reminder that the only thing more morally repugnant than passing judgment on another human being's private struggle and inner world, than choosing self-righteousness over compassionate understanding, is doing so publicly, especially as a currency of tabloidism. What a spectacular failing of the awareness that it's far more rewarding to understand than to be right. One can only hope this awareness has evolved for us, both as a culture and as individuals, since Wolf's time. And that's the end of the article. The soundtrack is Me on the Inside by Ketsa, licensed through ketsa.uk. If you want to learn more about AIRS LA and the types of programs we offer, follow us by clicking on any of the social media links at the top of our web pages. If you like what you see or hear, please click the like button. This podcast is for the sole use of our blind, low vision, and print impaired listeners. Any unauthorized use is prohibited. I'm Emily Mann Sanchez, and I'll be back with another article. Take care, and thanks for listening.